Good morning, everyone. My name is Corrine Bauer, and my family and I have been coming to Calvary. We started at the Boulder campus, in 2010, and then we moved over to the Thornton campus when it opened here. And I serve on the worship team, and I'm honored to be able to read our scriptures this morning. The scripture is 1 Corinthians 14, 26 through 40. What then, brothers? When you come together, each one has a hymn, a lesson, a revelation, a tongue, or an interpretation. Let all things be done for building up. If any speak in tongue, let there only be two or three at most, and each in turn, and let someone interpret. But if there is no one to interpret, let each of them keep silent in church and speak to himself and to God. Let two or three prophets speak, and let the others weigh what is said. If a revelation is made to another sitting there, let the first be silent. For you can all prophesy one by one, so that all may learn and all be encouraged. And the spirits of prophets are subject to prophets. For God is not a God of confusion, but of peace. As in all the churches of all the saints, the women should be kept silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but should be in submission, as the law also says. If there is anything they desire to learn, let them ask their husbands at home, for it is shameful for a woman to speak in church. Or was it from you that the word of the Lord came? Or are you the only ones it has reached? If anyone thinks that he is a prophet or spiritual, he should acknowledge that the things I am writing to you are a command of the Lord. If anyone does not recognize this, he is not recognized. So my brothers, earnestly desire to prophesy, and do not forbid speaking in tongues, but all things should be done decently and in order.
Well, I know how this looks. We've had a few weeks now in March where we've had some difficult passages, especially ones that deal with these spiritual gifts, the more miraculous spiritual gifts of speaking in tongue and prophesying. And I just so happen to be gone for all of them. We had 2 weeks that we were in chapter 12 and that I was not here for. And then last week when Brody was here, I was also not here. But I had no problem coming back for those beautiful passages on love out of chapter 13 in between them. I said at the time for chapter 12 that I was grateful for those 2 weeks. I've been working on a class that looks at what does God say about all the places that we live. Whatever that might look like, the Bible has a lot to say about our homes. So I've been working on this class called Making Your Homes Matter, and excited for that to come out the first week of May. I was grateful for last week. I was actually out of town at a conference, and part of our denomination, the Evangelical Free Church of America, they put on this class, and I was glad for the opportunity to be gone there. And so Brody being here last week allowed me to fully be away, to not be writing a sermon at nights after spending my time at this conference. But I was even more glad to come and worship with you all last week and see what a terrific job he did of handling the text, of helping us to see what is Paul saying, how does that speak into the place that we are. And in fact, the passage that Brody was on, the key point that he was looking at, is actually a good segue, a transition point into our passage as well. Which, as that passage was just read for us, we see there's some parts in there that we might have a question or two about. And let the record show, I did not skip out on being here this Sunday, because no one was available to cover it. But look at verse 26. It says, what then, brothers and sisters? Whenever we see brothers, we recognize it's speaking to both men and women in the church. What then, brothers and sisters? When you come together, each one has a hymn, a lesson, a revelation, a tongue, or an interpretation. Let all things be done for building up. Paul says that when you come together, and that's what we do as a church, that is who we are, that is the basic understanding of what a church is. We are people who gather together. We come together for fellowship and community, joining with one another, and as we do so, each one has something. It has some sort of giftedness, something to contribute to the gathering of the church. This is the point that we've been making week after week after week in this section, that every single Christian is gifted by the Holy Spirit with something, something that you have, something that God has made you uniquely you so that you can contribute to the church. And the purpose of that gifting is given as well. This is for building up. Brody was helping us to see this idea last week, that everybody has this giftedness, but the purpose of that is not drawing attention to myself or me getting honor or glory or whatever it is. God has gifted every Christian for the building up of the church together. And this has been missed in the city of Corinth, that they put this emphasis on these miraculous gifts and they thought they were proofs, well, God must really favor me. Look at how great I am that I can do this thing. Look at how it proves God is working in me, proves that I have been faithful. Oh, you can't do this? Guess you're a lesser Christian then. And Paul has been emphatically saying, no, that's not it at all. We are all different. We are all unique and necessarily so. That we all have a variety of gifts, and it's only in the variety that we can help build up one another. That if everyone's the same, guess what? Everyone's gonna remain the same. But it's only in our distinction, our variety of giftedness that allows the church to be built up. But now Paul adds one more idea on top of it. And it's kind of a necessary adjustment, because if we all hear this true message of every Christian is gifted, everyone contributes to the building up of the church, well, we have a tendency to take that and maybe go a little bit further than what is helpful. Because if we show up saying, I'm gifted, I'm gonna do my own thing, I'm gonna put my gifts on display, and everyone is doing that, well, it can quickly unravel. It can quickly become a show about me. It can quickly descend into chaos. And that's why Paul concludes this idea in verse 40. He says, but all things should be done decently and in order. All things are to be done decently in order. It is true. You, as a Christian, are gifted for the building up of the church. You have been given a unique ability that is for the good of all of us gathered together. You have something given by God for the building up of the church. But if all of us come in with just, my gifts are going to be put on display, it descends into disorder. And that is not going to reflect God, because God is a God of order. God is a God of peace. And so our gathering together is to be done so decently and in order. He gives an example of this in verse 27. He says, if any speak in a tongue, let there only be two or at most three, and each in turn, and let someone interpret. So again, an example is given of how this is to be done orderly. They had this as an emphasis in the church of Corinth, that people would just come and I have this gift of tongues, I'm gonna use this gift of tongues, and it just descended into chaos. That it was all people doing their own things and it wasn't the building up of the church together. And so Paul gives some instruction for how to do this orderly. First, he says this all important word, if. If someone has a tongue. It's never an assumption. This isn't something that you must be able to do this to demonstrate that you're a true Christian. There's no guarantee that people are gonna come in with the gift of tongues. If someone's speaking in a tongue is the first thing. But the second, it's to be done in turns. Two people, maybe three, are to do this. And again, all of Corinth said that you should be doing this. And so it's telling this right here that there are some who have this gift of tongues who are going to not exercise it, not use this giftedness that's been given to them, to pause from using what God has given for the purpose of maintaining order. And then this idea as well that it is to be done with an interpreter. We saw last week in the passage that if everyone is in there just speaking in tongues, it sounds like babbling. It's useless. It does not do anyone any good. There needs to be someone there to interpret it. And so Paul is saying that if no one is there to interpret it, then don't do it. He says, let them keep silent in the church. You have this gift from God, but be silent with it. Don't use it if it's not going to be done properly, orderly. If it's not done taking turns, if it's not done with an interpreter, then it's not going to be done. Remain silent on this to maintain order in the church rather than chaos. He says the same thing in verse 29. Let two or three prophets speak, and let the others weigh what is said. Again, people in the church of Corinth would have this message from God that would be for the good of the people. It was this giftedness that they had. But only a few were called to use it in this way. Only a few were called to speak. Otherwise, in verse 30, they are to remain silent. that even though they have this giftedness, that if all are using this giftedness, it's chaotic. It's not helpful. It doesn't build up the church, which is what the gifts are for. Even though people have this giftedness from God, if they're not able to do so in an orderly way, they're not going to use this gift. It's not going to be helpful in that way. This is how we try to arrange our time that we gather together on a Sunday. This is how we seek to do it. We don't necessarily spell it out quite as clearly as this, but when we gather here, by no means am I the only person capable of opening the Bible and saying, this is what I think God has for us. In no way am I. There's tons of gifted people in here. And yet we arrange our time to where there are few people speaking in our service, not because anyone has the most important voice or the only voice, but as a way for us to orderly understand and learn and grow together. That if all of us are speaking up, there's not going to be understanding. There's not going to be time to pause and reflect. There's not going to be the ability to see, is this actually true? Does this reflect what God has for us? Now, I recognize that this could sound like it is directly contradicting from that point that we've been making all this time, that every single Christian is gifted for the building up of the church. But if we just have it that a few are speaking or a few are participating, man, it could feel like a lot of our service is just sitting and watching, that we're just there to be passive and turn off our brains and have content dumped on us, and then we go about our way. But that's not, I don't think, a reflection as to what it is that we're doing here. This isn't a time of passivity. This isn't a time where there's a few experts to speak and everyone else is just supposed to get your stuff and leave. That's not what church is. And it's not what Paul calls for the church to be. When he says that some are to be silent, some are to not utilize the gifts that they have, he's saying, but you're supposed to be active. You're still part of the service. In verse 29, two or three prophets speak and the others weigh what is said. This is assessing, is this true? Is this right? Does it reflect what God says? Later on, he talks about how the spirit of prophets in verse 32 are subject to prophets. So anytime that someone is speaking on stage, it's not, all right, just blindly receive it. It's, what does God have for me? What does God have for this church? Is this true? Is this accurate? Is this reflecting what is true and right about God? It's not passivity. It is us coming together, and as we engage, as we participate, that is a benefit. That builds up the church all around us. My voice is not the only voice. It is not the most important voice that there is. But if it's everyone's voice in a service, Paul says that's not helpful. That's not building up. That doesn't allow us to weigh. That doesn't allow the message to be subject to everyone else. That's not something that helps us to grow at all. But also it comes with a reminder that maybe we think of the giftedness that we have must only be for Sunday morning. This isn't the only time that we gather. There's so many people here who are gifted by God and help build up the church on Monday nights or Thursday mornings or whenever it is that we are with people of this church. There are a myriad of ways that we can use the myriad of ways that God has gifted us all throughout the week, all throughout this morning as well. But we also try to reflect this need for ordering that Paul is saying here. All of this is about everyone is gifted, but there is a need when we gather for an ordering of this, otherwise it just descends into chaos. We try to be clear about everything that we do here. When we join together on a Sunday morning, we start by saying, here's what we're going to do today. We're praising God. Today it was a prayer looking at the second song that we did. Sometimes we turn to passage and say, this is why God is worthy of being praised. Sometimes it's pointing to things that God is doing elsewhere, but we explain, here's why we're here on a Sunday. Every Sunday, we have someone read the passage. Before I say anything about it, we want to hear, what does God say himself? Before there's any commentary or assessment or illustrations or attempts at humor or whatever it is that I try to do with the passage, we want to see, what does God actually say in it? That's the focus. We turn to him for all things. When we take communion on the first Sunday of every month, I say the exact same setup every single time, lest we forget what we're doing or have a lesser picture of what taking communion is. We try to be very clear to maintain the order of what it is that we're doing here. But we also seek to do what Paul is calling for in this. We have said every single Christian is gifted for the building up of the church. But that doesn't mean that every single time we gather is the time to utilize that giftedness. One of the commentators I read put it this way. He says, Paul assumes that every member of the church will arrive looking for opportunities not just to receive, but also to contribute encouragement in some way. However, love demands not only a readiness to use one's gifts, but often a willingness not to do so. Because remember, the context of the gifts that are for the building up the church is all about love. That's chapter 13. That wasn't a random side note. Paul is saying that we utilize gifts out of love. And if we show up at church and say, well, God has gifted me in this way, so I must be allowed free rein to use my giftedness. Otherwise, you are limiting me. And you're saying that God is wrong for giving me this gift. That's not it at all. Because what's going on in that situation, we're not using the gifts out of love. We're not looking to build up others. We're just looking at ourselves in that. God has given me this ability, so I must be allowed to use it. Well, then we're not using the gifts as they're supposed to be given. So then we're not truly using the gifts. I think these 2 weeks that we've had, last week and this week, speak to one of two ways that Christians tend to err. The generalization maybe doesn't count for us at all, but one of two ways that Christians tend to err. One is not being willing to use the giftedness that God has given to them, not to use the gifts for the building up of the church. That the idea is that we show up on a Sunday, we get what we need, and then we get out of here. That's not God's design for who he's made you to be and how he has placed you in this place for your good. Brody talked about this last week. I'm not gonna dwell on this point. But the other side is this mentality that since God has gifted me this way, I must be allowed to exercise my gifts. Otherwise, it's a limitation. Otherwise, it's denying what God has given me. Otherwise, you are stopping me from what God has given. And that's not the case. That if it's this insistence on using gifts, well, we're running into the same issues that we see in Corinth. This mentality that since God has given me, well, clearly, God's doing something to me. Who are you to say no to that? Who are you to put limitations on it? And Paul says, well, people sent by God to maintain order in the church service. That if all of us are putting on display our gifts, we're not using the gifts right. It's more about ourselves in that situation. More about what we think we have a right to. And that's not the purpose of the gifts. That's not what they're given for. And it speaks to one of the most difficult parts of my job. That I think I'm in a unique position to try to understand what is going on in the church as a whole. What is the direction that God is calling the church as a whole? And then how do we all fit into that? How is our giftedness towards the building up in that direction? Now, in no way does that mean I am a barrier. You need to get my permission in order to be part of the Sunday service or to use your gifts here. Not at all. But it's trying to understand how has God called all of us and trying to have a bigger picture than just here's how I think God has gifted me. And I will admit that I am going to make mistakes in this process. I'll admit to already making mistakes in this process of not utilizing the giftedness that God has given to people in ways that are for the good of the church in the way that God is calling us. And it's actually worse than that. It's not just that I'll make mistakes. I will fail miserably in this way because I could have a hard time distinguishing what is the direction God has for us and what are my preferences. And sometimes people will be gifted in a way that just doesn't line up with what I think is actually good or not corny or anything like that. And I'll say, no, I'm not right now. And that's a problem. That is a huge failure on my part when that's the case. Clearly, churches have failed the church body when they do not provide opportunities to utilize giftedness. Paul says every single Christian is gifted, and so we need to find places for people to serve in the way that God has given them. But on the other side, people have left churches because they said, I wasn't allowed to use my giftedness in the way I saw I needed to. And that's a problem because the purpose of the gifts is not about me. It is about the building up of the church. And when we see it as I need to be allowed to do this, that's not the gifts anymore. All throughout chapters 12 through 14, we have been looking at the fact every single Christian is gifted by God and the purpose of those gifts is building up, not boasting. Mutual edification, not mere self-expression. Which gets into the third example of what order looks like in the church in utilizing giftedness. And that's verses 34 and 35. The women should keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but should be in submission. As the law also says, if there is anything they desire to learn, let them ask their husbands at home, for it is shameful for a woman to speak in church. All right, there are so many different ways that people understand this passage, and I don't have the space to go through all of them, mostly because I don't understand all of them, but I want to do two things in understanding this passage. One is try to give us tools for when we read a passage like this on our own. Notice I'm assuming that you're reading the Bible on our own, something that's good for all of us to be doing, so I'm not asking if you are. When we read the Bible on our own, we're going to read passages like this, and how do we handle them, especially when on the surface, maybe a gut instinct is, well, that can't possibly mean this, or, I don't think I agree with that. So what do we do when it's hard to understand what God is saying into it, and how does it impact our life? So I want to give a couple tools, really basic reading tools for understanding a passage like this, and then I'm going to share what I think is going on in this passage. So how do we read difficult passages, and then what is this difficult passage saying? Two just really basic ideas for how we read a difficult Bible passage. One, we always read it in its context. And two, we read what is less clear, like this passage, by what is more clear. So in context, aiming for what is most clear. Context and clarity. There's a lot of context for this passage. We could go all the way back, and we will in just a second, to chapter 11, which kicks off this idea that Paul has been on. What does it look like for orderliness in the church service? Started in chapter 11, then 12 through 14 is all about how do we use spiritual gifts, and now we wrap up on this passage right here. So we'll go back to chapter 11 in a second. But even just in our passage today, there's some helpful bits of context that's given to us here. I don't know if I have it in front. Oh, I do. Great. So when we just look at the immediate context, there are helpful pieces. And one of the most important things is to look at, this is not the only time silence has been called for. Maybe our brain just gravitates towards that because it sounds incendiary. Women are to remain silent. Remember, two other times there is silence that's been called for, in verse 28 and in verse 30. The idea being is that in verse 28, if there is no one to interpret, someone has been this giftedness from God, but they can't do it in an orderly way, they are to temporarily remain silent. It's not once and forever. You can never exercise the giftedness that you have because one time it didn't work out right. The same thing for prophecy, that if someone else has a word from God for the church, then it's a temporary silence, temporarily not using this giftedness that's been given. It's not, well, someone else spoke up once, so you can never do it again, as if Brody preached last week, so I'm never allowed to come back up on stage again. Of course, that's not what's going on. And so how silence is used two other times in this passage is going to help us understand what silence means this time. It's not as though temporary silence, once and for all silence. Like that makes no sense. We don't read that way. So it's clearly not a blanket statement that women are to never speak in a church service, let alone when you go to the larger context. Again, going back to chapter 11, Paul spends a lot of time understanding how do husbands and wives relate in a church service. That feels like that has some bearing on this passage, right? Since this is about women who have husbands, we typically call those, you know, wives, how husbands and wives are to orderly maintain their relationship in a church service. We don't have time to go through all of what chapter 11 says. I encourage you to go back to the message that I gave on that passage. I know you're clamoring to hear more from me. But in that one, our big takeaway was it is vital. Women are vital for the church community. And for our purposes, what Paul is saying in chapter 11 is how women are to properly pray and prophesy in the church service. That's what Paul is saying. When you pray, when you prophesy, speaking to women, here's how to do it correctly. Why would it be in three chapters that Paul says, here's how to do it right, and then to say, but actually don't ever do it? It makes no sense at all. And then you go to the bigger context of other places that this idea shows up in the New Testament. Brody quoted from Acts chapter 2 last week, this incredible moment where the Spirit was poured out on the church for the first time. And what we see there is there's a quotation from the Old Testament, a passage called Joel 2, where it foresees a day when your daughters, anyone want to guess if daughters would be women? Yeah, they are. Your daughters, women, will prophesy. And that's important because Peter says in Acts chapter 2, that day's now. This has happened. So why would this be such a dramatic moment in the formation of the church that daughters are prophesying? And Paul says, but actually don't do it. Let alone the fact that for all of these chapters, 12 through 14, Paul has been saying to the church as a whole, every Christian is gifted for the building up of the church. And now he would say to half his audience, but not you though. Of course, that's not what's going on. When we look at the context of this passage, when we look at the idea that's being said here, this is not a blanket statement that women are to forever never utter a word within a church gathering. And some people might say, but clearly it says. Like, you just look at the simple reading of it. It is quite clear what it's supposed to mean. My question is always, when people say it clearly means something, is clearly to whom? To people who ignore context and basic reading comprehension? I don't mean that as a slam. It's just we don't read anything this way. Take a small bit, rip it out of context, make it mean something that it doesn't, and form our entire opinion based off of that little bit of scraps. I should probably clarify. We shouldn't read that way. Some people certainly do. And so I'm not doing interpretive gymnastics to make this passage mean what it doesn't mean. I'm reading like we read everything. Looking at the context, using what is more clear to understand something that is less clear. And the context to this passage is vital. Here we transition into what I think is going on in this verse. The context of this passage is vital. All of it, from verse 29 on to this verse, is about assessing prophecies. We already looked at this a little bit. Let others weigh what is said. Prophets are subject to other prophets. All of it into this verse about women are to remain silent is all about assessing, is this prophecy genuine? Is it true? Is it real? Is it from God? The context is about assessing prophecy. This is something really important for this church. It's so much so that Paul talks about it for other churches as well. 1 Thessalonians 5 says, do not resist the Spirit, the work of the Spirit. Do not detest prophecy, but test everything. Assess it. Is this true? Is this genuine? Is this from God? The role of the church is to be listening actively. Does this reflect what is true and real about God? Because in this time that we're in, where we are seeing through a mirror dimly, it is hard to know, is this truly from God? A sure feeling of what the Spirit is doing in my life might not be. A certainty that this is what God wants me to do could just be what we want God to be doing. And so when we gather as a church, it's always to see, is this true? Is this right? Is this what God is actually doing in this time that's hard to assess that? But Paul's point here is what happens when a wife disagrees with her husband's prophecy. The husband stands up in the church, says, this is something from God for all the people. And the wife says, nope, incorrect. That's not true. That's not right. That's problematic. It is disorder in the church, but it's disorder in this important relationship of husbands and wives together. That Paul just spent all this time in chapter 11 saying, this needs to be done orderly. This is important. That how a wife acts in church could actually bring shame on her husband. Notice how this is the first time that we're talking about shame since that very time. It's the same idea. That Paul couches this conversation on orderliness in the church with husbands and wives and ends with husbands and wives. It's speaking about the same idea. And so Paul is saying that when a wife is doing this, when she's speaking against her husband's prophecy, it's not just bringing disorder in the church service, it's breaking down this important relationship between husbands and wives. But it's not saying, well, you just gotta ignore it. Your husband said something wrong, you gotta just deal with it, just ignore it, go about your day. No, it's hold them accountable. It's speaking about it back home. Ask these questions at home in a way that doesn't bring disorder when the church is gathered together. Maybe it's helpful if I try to explain this with an illustration. So I'm up here preaching, and I say something incorrect. Not very hard to imagine what that would look like. I give you ample opportunities to see what that's like. But I do that, and my wife, Emily, stands up and calls me out for it. That would interrupt this time. That is for all of us to learn and grow together. But more importantly than that, it's going to lead to some questions, right? Like, I'm not naive in thinking about this. There's going to be people wondering, what's going on at home? If this is what they're doing in the church service, I think there's something broken at home. And that's what Paul is getting to here. It's not something special about wives are not able to do this or they don't understand. It's they're there to learn, be part of the church, use their giftedness. But if that's going to break down the order of the service, if that's going to break down the importance of this marital relationship, that is problematic. Because God is not a God of disorder, but of peace. That's this hinge point. He's not a God of confusion, but of peace. I can't underline it because it's right at the bottom of the page. I'm going to change colors and stuff like that. But God is a God of peace. And that is to be reflected in how we gather together. That is to be reflected in how husbands and wives relate in the church. I know I'm not doing a service to answering all the questions that could come from this difficult to understand passage. If you still have questions, I'm happy-ish to answer them. But after service, so that we can maintain order in our time together. I'm also not doing this passage justice because I'm spending so much more time on this verse than what Paul wants to be spent on this. I recognize, though, it has question marks that come with it. It sounds like, well, this can't possibly mean. And so we need to address it. We need to do so. But it's supposed to be part of a series that Paul is working through of if gifts cannot be used properly, silence is the option. If gifts are going to bring about disorder in the church, then we are to abstain from using gifts. That the purpose of us gathering together is to build one another up, which sometimes might mean we are not serving in the way that we think God has primarily called us to, or using the gifts that God has primarily given us. It is for the looking of the betterment of the church as a whole. That is his primary idea. And this was being missed in the city of Corinth, that people thought gifts were just a way to say, look at me, and clearly I'm doing things right. And that is not the purpose of the gifts. It is for the building up of everyone. This thought that they could do these miraculous things, show that God was particularly working within them, that's not true at all. But I've been wondering, as we've been making this point of how Corinth misunderstood these gifts, my question has been, is that something we're doing? Do we struggle with gifts in the same way? Do we think that they're really just for our benefit to draw attention to ourselves? And especially these more miraculous gifts, or this proof that God clearly must be working in me because look at what I can do. I don't always know. But at least when I was trying to think of how does this resonate with me? I think of the times that I pray for God to do something incredible through my life, which we are encouraged to pray. That's a good prayer to pray. But I always think of, what's my motivation when I'm doing that? What's the reason that I want that to happen? I'm not convinced it's for the building up of the church. I'm not certain that I want God to do this in my life because I want to maintain order in how we gather together. I think it's because there's a lot of times that I have doubts, that I have questions. And God, if I could see you do something incredible through my life, well, then I'll know that you're here. Then I'll know that you're with me. Then I'll know that I'm in good standing with you. But look at what Paul directs the attention to at the end of the passage, which I apparently don't have up here. Look at what Paul directs their attention to at the end of the passage. It's the word of God. Looking at what God has said, what he has revealed, that in this, when we turn to his word, that is where we find reality and assurance and comfort. That is when we find him. I mean, how do I know that the Spirit is working in me? Well, his word assures us that he is. How do I know what it is that God has for me? There's a lot of questions, a lot of different directions to do. What do I do? Well, his word shows us his way. More than that, those questions, those doubts that come, how do I know that he's there? How do I know he's truly with me? Well, his word gives us the instruction that we need. See, the hinge point of this verse is God is not a God of confusion, but of order. He's the God of peace. And we looked at that as, so when we gather, we want to have order in our service because our God is a God of peace. So we want that to be reflected in how we gather together. But think about what this means for your life as well. That in all the chaos and confusion of pain and doubt, the feelings of directionlessness and fear, think of the comfort it is that your God is the God of peace. that when we read passages that are confusing, when we don't know the way to go, when we don't know what God has for us, we know that God has us. And these times of chaos, these times of feeling lost, these times of directionlessness, well, they're going to go away. This God who's working all things together for our good is the God of peace. And that God is with you. Let me pray for us. Father, we are grateful that this is a church that gathers. We gather to praise you, to remind each other of the myriad of ways or reasons that we have to turn to you with all of our lives. We gather to use the gifts that you have given to us to build one another up. We gather to turn to your word, to hear what you are saying to us. And we are grateful that this is a place who goes to passages that are difficult, that we don't shy away, we don't make it mean something that it doesn't, we don't argue it away, but we look, we wrestle with it. What are you saying? What is it that you have for us? That we want to read together because we're always better when we do things together. We want to share ideas because you've given us different ideas on the same passage. And it's as we are different, as you have made us unique, that is when the church has an opportunity to be built up. We are stronger because of our differences. What could otherwise divide and bring about disunity, difference, it feels like a deal breaker so much in the world around us. You've given it to us as something beautiful, something wonderful, something that makes us to be the people you've called us to be, and that is your people. So we strive with all that we have to reflect order because you are the God of peace. So it's to you and you alone we pray.